Thank you, Danielle. And I'm Mark, and I am a compulsive eater, overeater, and just delighted to be here this afternoon. And I want to thank Samantha, Jane, and Alan for volunteering to answer some questions. My apologies to Alan. He came in at the last minute. I think I sent out the questions to everybody, but I just saw it flashing across my screen before, as the meeting was progressing, that my email to Alan was undeliverable. So my apologies and my gratitude for everybody that is doing this here this afternoon. And briefly, I'm here because I just weighed too much, and you folks had a solution. My original sponsor dropped out by the time he got to the steps, but he had a message for me. It didn't matter what the condition of the messenger was, he had a message for me that worked. And I'm really grateful to him and the guy who took me through the steps again in order to maintain a healthy body weight. So with that, we'll start. We have several questions here for everybody. And but first, how about we briefly qualify so that the audience gets a chance to know our panel members? And we'll start out with Samantha. Can you briefly give yourself 2 or 3 minutes to briefly qualify?
Sure. Hi. Thank you, Mark. And thank you everybody who put this together and everybody who shared so far. I'm Sam. I'm a food addict. I came in 4.5 years ago, how abstinent for that time. I am down a little over 100 pounds. I am currently pregnant, so gaining some of that the healthy baby weight. But I can say that I for sure qualify. It got to the point right before I came in where I was eating off of the floor, out of my hair, binging once a day and not eating the rest of the day, which had been a pattern throughout my life, was I don't even know if I can call it restricting. I guess it is. Eating one huge meal instead of, 3 to 5 healthy sized meals, and gaining and losing and gaining and losing. So when thank God a therapist recommended OA to me when I was in college, I had dipped my toe in a little bit, and I knew that that made sense to me, what I heard at those couple of meetings I dipped in and out of made absolute sense to me. I think I just wasn't ready. But I came in tw I think it was 2017, and did not get a sponsor right away. I lingered in the rooms and just cried and listened for about 5 or 6 months. I'm not sure, but it took me a little bit to feel like I was ready to get a sponsor, but I stayed in the rooms and coming to meetings for that time, and I've been working with sponsors since then, more than one sponsor over that time, and I have been sponsoring on and off since pretty much since my step up at 90 days. I currently have two sponsees, one of whom is How and one who is not. But I have had up to three. And there have been times where I didn't have any sponsees. So glad to be here. Glad that there is an event with this topic. I think it's really important. So I'm excited to answer any questions.
Thanks, Sam. And next, we'll Jane, could you qualify?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, thank you. Thank you for asking me to be on the panel. I volunteered. I don't know which one, but my name is Jane. I'm a food addict, compulsive overeater, and recovery with Overeaters Anonymous. been coming since 1975, before some of you guys were even born. And I don't really know how I found it, but I'm just grateful that I found it. My present abstinence is from 1990. I had an intervention and was sent away and been absent ever since then with the HAL program also. I was a purger. I was a trash eater. I ate out of trash. Food was like the most important thing in my life. If I wanted something that bad, I'd go out in the middle of the night and get it. And I eat four way to measure meals a day today. I still call into a sponsor, write down a gratitude list, and I make my higher power the most important thing in my life. I still sponsor. I've sponsored up to 8 people at a time, and now I think I'm doing 4. And at one time, I would only sponsor people who were HAL, and now I sponsor four different food programs, and it's just acceptance. Honesty with a sponsee is the most important thing for me. I'm sort of like, we were talking about, I'm a moderate sponsor. I will work with somebody as long as they're honest with me and they're abstinent. And it just seems that it's working out well that way for me now. And I'm just very grateful that that I can pass on my strength and hope that I can give that to somebody else. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jane. And Alan, could you qualify for us briefly?
Sure. My name is Alan. I'm a grateful upstanding compulsive overeater, and I'm a relapse survivor. I'm in Cleveland now, but formerly from New Jersey, hence my Midwestern accent. And so I've been in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous since November 22nd, 1975. So I just looked that up. It was 45 years and 9 months today. And my current abstinence goes back to January 6th of 1986. So that's 35.62 years. My words are of somebody that you say, this happened. This happened as a result of the sponsorship that I had, as a result of people really reaching out to me. I came in when I was 17 years old. My first sponsor gave me the greatest gift. He just came over to me, basically. He said he would sponsor me. And I didn't know what a sponsor was. You know, he gave me a little explanation and I said, okay. And I didn't even have enough time to judge at that time. You know, I just had to take him just like that. And that was a great gift. And I've had many sponsors over the years. And my sponsorship has changed over the years. I have a secret power, okay, or a secret identity, right? Well, it's not really a secret identity, but in case anybody doesn't know, I'm not just a man in the rooms. I'm a sponsor man, okay? I'm a sponsor man. And that truly is a true, unbelievable gift and a power, you know? I love the topic. Thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Vanessa, you know, and the idea of the boundaries. And one of the first things I heard years ago was, I don't care if you killed your bird, I just want to know if you ate it. And I need to know that that stops that judgment, you know, that I have. And, you know, the just the gift of sponsorship on both ends, to have a sponsor and to be a sponsor. The big book certainly addresses that, you know, something you don't want to miss. So currently, you know, I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. I sponsor a number of guys. I'm a non-equal opportunity sponsor. And that means for me that I sponsor people differently. You know, today that works. At one point it was, this is how you get sponsored. I do believe in daily commitment though. And daily prep with them. And that's who I am. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Sam and Jane, and we'll get into our top 5 questions here. And our first question is, what do you do to make it known that you're available to be a sponsor? What kind of proactive steps do you take? And Sam, if you could kick us off on that.
Sure. I announce when it's asked at the meetings that I attend for sponsors to make themselves known. If they're available, I will raise my hand or put it in the chat and let it be known that I'm available. I also make sure if there is a sponsor coordinator, that they have my name. I'll text them or call them on the side and say, do you have a list of available sponsors? Make sure I'm on there. If anybody's looking for a sponsor. And then if I get somebody and I feel like I'm full up, I'll then just let them know that I'm not available anymore. Just so they, have up to date kind of information. But I think it's important that for me anyway, if somebody does approach me and kind of seem like they're heading towards maybe asking me to sponsor them, that I don't automatically just take that on if I can. So I have to, it's hard for me, but I have to kind of maybe talk to my sponsor and be like, I feel like this might be a future kind of sponsor-sponsee relationship, but I don't know. And that, whether what the answer to that would be would depend on what I have going on, because I don't want to shortchange anybody too. So that's an ongoing conversation with anybody who is new or looking for a sponsor. Thanks.
Thank you, Sam. And Jane, could you let us know what you do to make it that you're available?
What do you do to make it known that you're available to be a sponsor? Basically, in the live meetings, when people would say they're looking for a sponsor, if I felt something about our combination would work, I will go up to them quietly and say, why don't you give me a call? We'll talk about it. And at times, if someone would come up to me and ask me to be their sponsor, I would do the same thing, because there's just a certain few things that I ask them to, if they want me to be their sponsor, that the guidelines that I would like to do. And then the third thing, sometimes I get up on top of the chair and yell, I'm available, but not really. That's a joke. But right now, at this time in my life, I have 4 sponsees, and I don't really think that I would take more, because I wouldn't be giving enough time to everybody else, and I wouldn't be comfortable. So I just, that's what I do. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. And finally, Alan, what do you do other than jumping into a phone booth and shedding your business code to make it known that you're a sponsor?
I do make it known. Thank you. I really take that guideline from what I got from my first sponsor, you know, who said, I'll sponsor you. Now, I don't necessarily say it with that, but I only work with men in the program. So as a new man would walk into program or get onto the new Zoom camera, you know, I've learned that I don't say, here's my phone number, and if you like, give me a call. I say, would it be all right if I gave you a call? You know, and I don't sell myself as a sponsor. And in fact, if anything, I just try and find out maybe what questions they do have and what brought them there. And then that wonderful term, I can help you get started. It's probably always the biggest thing that has allowed higher power to work for me. Like, because my schedule says nobody. I do not have time for anybody else. That is it. But that newcomer is desperate, you know, and this also means I can pass them down to other people that I sponsor if they're open to that. But a lot of times I'll say, you know, look, maybe I can get you started. And we come up with a time that would work just for that particular, you know, that I'm committed for that starting time. And then all of a sudden God seems to take over. And if it's the right person, it just seems to be, well, what do you know? That time now actually just became available, you know? So, yeah. So I think it's the fact that I do reach out to them, you know, and again, in my case, I use the guys in program.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alan. Our next question is, how do you assist a new sponsee in getting a food plan? Is professional guidance suggested? Sam?
Hi, sure. So I always, my go-to is to start talking about the gray sheet. That's how I started. And if there are any kind of issues with that, if there's any concerns, if there's any health issues to take into consideration, we talk about that. And then possibly I will say, why don't you talk to your such and such a doctor, whatever doctor you're seeing, a nutritionist, a dietitian, a health coach, you know, different people sometimes are already talking to these people. So I'll suggest maybe that they bring this food plan to those people and talk about it with each of them and make adjustments if need be. But my starting point has always been the gray sheet.
Thank you, Sam. Jane, would you like to share with us how you assist a new sponsee in getting a food plan? And do you recommend professional help?
It's funny, but the previous, just for a minute, that's happened to me so many times where I said, I'll just get you started and we'll fit you in. And all of a sudden we're working together. That's happened to me many times. But when I have a new sponsee, if they ask me what I'm doing, I tell them what I'm doing. And I also, the Dignity of Choice pamphlet, which has three or four food programs, I have a supply of them. So I will mail it out to that person. And I've done that to quite a few people during this pandemic who weren't looking for a sponsor, just as a form of service. And then we can go over. And sometimes if we go over that, they want a piece of this, a piece of that, and a piece of this. We'll make a personalized food plan for them. And if somebody suggests that they want to go to a nutritionist or doctor, I would never say no. But basically, that's what I do with the food plans. I work with each person as an individual. And it's cute. Sometimes I'm sponsoring four individual food programs for people. And I forget, oh, number one is doing this, number two is doing that, and I'm doing this, and this one's doing that. It gets a little bit of confusion. But right now, it seems it's working out very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. And Alan.
I think one of the things that I do is, a lot of times when I'm starting with somebody brand new, what I do with the food is really just ask them for 1 week to log their food, list it. And in fact, usually I say, do not change anything. Just want to know how you normally eat, which of course, the minute they hear they're going to talk to somebody about their food becomes much cleaner, you know. But I really want to do that to find out, so what are their individual triggers? What do they consider their individual triggers? You know, so I really kind of started off with that. You know, the sponsor, I believe, was the capitalist, that wasn't the word, who was the, and I can't think of the word, who was the catalyst, that's the word, who was the catalyst for my abstinence. Was, you know, she just taught me no sugar, no matter what. That was what worked for me. Because I believe there's all these different food groups. I don't know what somebody needs to eat, but I don't see personally, you know, the need for that. So, but we discuss that and I let them know what I do. And because I work with guys also, a lot of times, you know, my food plan that I use is actually considerably larger, you know, it's different. And I just kind of share that and also address the fact that, tell me something that you've done that's worked before. Tell me, you know, maybe do you have something to go to your doctor? Talk to your doctor, talk to your wife, okay? Because I think that's important, you know, for a lot of guys. A lot of times, you know, do the cooking and how do I plan out my meals? Because by the next week, then we're planning it out. We're planning out what those meals are going to be based on a food plan that they've agreed to.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Alan. And now our next question is, should a sponsee be abstinent for a period of time prior to starting the steps? Your thoughts, Sam?
Hi, this is a great one. I think right away, regardless of whether somebody, you know, is immediately abstinent, I start sponsees on the first 30 days of how questions, which really the first 90 days of these predetermined questions take them through steps 1, 2, and 3. So that kind of, in my experience, has happened simultaneously to the food coming down. So I feel like that has made sense for sponsees of mine. But I don't know if I would have somebody start on a fourth step, like an in-depth fourth step, if they were not having some level of abstinence, just because there's still the chaos of food going on. And I just don't know that it would come out clearly, not that it can't be done again. But that hasn't happened. It hasn't happened that way. It's always kind of the food has come down as the first three steps are being talked about on a daily basis. So that's been my experience.
Thank you much, Sam. Jane.
Yeah. Hi. Well, I talked to my sponsor about this. I was doing my homework, and we came up with this. And the doctor's opinion, more often than not, it is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached, as he has then a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer. So in a way, if they're still in a food fog, it's going to be hard for them to start working the steps. So I really feel they should be abstinent and sober, abstinent. And if you want to start something quietly, you can ask them to do the first step. And I usually work with the workbook, the 12 steps in the workbook. And it takes a long time, and it gets there's a lot of questions, and it's what I do. I usually work with the 12 and 12 workbook, but like it says in the opinion, if the person's still in the food and not abstinent, it's going to be hard for that person to start working the steps. Thank you
Jane. And Alan.
Mark, I'm going to ask you, if you wouldn't mind, just repeating the question as it was, because I realize I understood it differently at first.
Okay, great. The question is, should a sponsee be abstinent for a period of time prior to starting the steps?
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so, you know, my old sponsor taught me step zero. She said, you know what, put down the food. Let's first put down the food, and then the steps are going to help us with keeping that down. So I have, a lot of times I'll take people through the big book and kind of review the steps within that area, you know, as they're kind of written around in different chapters within the big book. But we kind of then refocus back on step one. So if somebody is not abstinent, you know, or loses their abstinence, you know, maybe they've been abstinent for a little bit, but then they go back, we address the importance of step one. And that importance of step zero, you know, being able to, you know, keep it down and how it's important. So I believe that like when I think of myself, like I reviewed the steps over and over and worked through them. The way I did that 10 years ago was different than the way I did it 20 years ago. And 30, you know, various things have happened within my recovery. So I think it's a matter of the fact that I bring them back into it. But to first review, I might still do that because I want them to hear what the steps are. So, you know, and kind of know what the, you know, what the actual meaning is and what's it mean to do that. So.
Awesome. Thank you, Alan. And it looks like we've got time for one more question for our panel. And our next question is, what tools do you use to guide a sponsee through the steps? Sam, kick us off on that one.
Sure. I think this depends on a conversation, for me anyway, it depends if somebody's brand spanking new. If that's the case, then I will go to my default, which was how I did it the first time with my first sponsee. Which was the first 90 days, like I said, the first 90 days of questions kind of get you through steps one, two, and three. And once you two both agree that that's kind of on somewhat solid ground, and then what I did was use kind of like inventory sheets that I was given by my sponsor to help with step four, and then talk about that as it's happening and however long that takes, and then go through reading steps five and on together. I think that is how I did it the first time, and that's how I would go through in the 12 and 12 with a new sponsee. But if it's somebody who's gone through the steps before, then first thing I do is say, how have you done this in the past? And maybe let's do it a different way. So maybe go through the workbook and do it that way. Or maybe let's just read through the big book a sentence at a time, if that's, you know, something that they haven't done before. So I think it depends. But my go-to is the way that I was told by my sponsor, my first sponsor. That's, I feel like, always going to be my default. but it does, it depends on the individual person and what they feel comfortable with. Some people like to have prompts, and something to respond to, like in like a workbook kind of situation. And other people, that might not be ideal, or they've done it that way, and they want to switch it up. So I think it depends on the sponsee. Thanks.
Thank you, Sam. Jane, can you let us know what tools you use to guide a sponsee through this? Yeah.
Well, when I start with a new sponsee, to me, it's fresh and new. I don't really look into their past of what they've done, how they worked the steps before. And the tools, I ask them when we do the workbook to make sure they're reading from the 12 and 12, because sometimes they forget and they just answer the questions. So as far as reading, I ask them also to go to a few different meetings. Now it's mostly Zoom meetings, one or two are opening up. And if they're dual addicted, sometimes they go to like another kind of meeting where, and they forget about OA meetings. And I try to refresh their memory that we're working with OA. So I like them to go to meetings. I read quite a few meditation books in the morning, and I think and I ask them also to do that and write. And it's a whole combination. And we just go through a format with most of the people that I sponsor, and then we might chit-chat a little bit, but I try to get the business of OA first. And that's meetings, telephone calls, read literature, and write. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jane. And Alan.
So a lot of it, usually what I tend to do is I take them through what I had a sponsor do with me years ago after some of the back to basic meetings. It was kind of readings, you know, within the big book, but like very targeted, that this is where step one is addressed. This is where step two is addressed. And this is where step three, you know, and take it through that process. I also use the LA 12 and 12. I think the, you know, as I compare it, right, the two, right, not as I relate both, right? You know, the big book gives me a guideline and says, this is what we did, okay, you know, in starting the steps. And the OA 12 and 12 says, like, Alan, look what you're doing here. You know, it, so they both have great meaning to me. So usually it will be through that, also recommending other step meetings to get to in this crazy pandemic, and the fact that we have this Zoom. Now it's much easier to say, you know, I'm going to get to a step meeting on a Thursday or whatever and have that be the group. So I think that power of the group is important. The fact that we review the step work and what it really means. And some people, like, we physically read it together, you know, on the phone and that kind of thing. So it, and I also agree, you know, I think both Sam and Jane kind of alluded to the fact that different people have different ways, you know, so it's going to be what's really working for them. And I also kind of look at it that when we're starting up brand new, so it's going to be a new experience one way or the other, even if they've had plenty of times reading, you know, each of these pieces of literature. And that's what I do.
All right. Well, thank you, Alan. Thank you, Samantha. Thank you, Jane, for answering these questions for our workshop here today. And with that, I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Danielle.